I'm Ajax Zapatello from the Maryland Terrapins, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, and featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, the Inside Lacrosse analysts, and my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, another quality weekend last week, and this weekend sets up great with five top 20 matchups on deck. Plus, we get a chance to sit down with a leading candidate for the Schmeiser Award as the nation's top defenseman, Ajax Zapatello from Maryland. Plenty to get into, so Dixie, let's get it. Dix, it's been a busy week. Last weekend, I know you were down in Atlanta to see Owen's first game at UNC and catch that doubleheader. And then the Super Bowl, Valentine's Day.
This is always a super busy time of year, but I feel like it's getting busier and busier, you know, with both the kids in college and trying to make sure that my wife and I have their games covered. And also you're involved as a parent in the activities of each program. You have certain responsibilities for, you know, the tailgate or for dues, or, you know, there's just a sundry of things that you find yourself, you know, and it's different for each. Like at Loyola, we're a third year family. Carolina, still meeting people for the first time, but it's exciting and it's cool. It's only going to get a lot busier from here. And I'm like, man, do I have the energy to keep up?
Yeah. You haven't even started broadcasting games yet. Your schedules.
I've had one.
Oh, that's true. You did the Hopkins game last week, but that was like a in-town game. You didn't have to try.
Right. That was,
So I got to ask you, everyone's probably dying to hear the answer to this. You've been to a Loyola tailgate. And you've been to your first UNC tailgate as a parent. Who had better food? What
so
is a better that, spread?
Yeah. Not accurate. Since the UNC game was part of that Atlanta Lacrosse Invitational, and it was at Silverbacks Park, everything was inside of the stadium. So, in other words, parents didn't do a tailgate outside in the parking lot because they had food trucks, restaurants set up. They sold alcohol during the game, you know, so there were bars set up and things of that nature. I have to tell you though, so UMass played Army in the first game. Mm-hmm. And then when they got done, obviously there was a warm-up period for Mercer and North Carolina. And I went to use a restroom, I think, and I walked right by UMass post game and they had Mission Barbecue.
Ooh.
And it smelled so, and I was starving, and it smelled so good. It looked so good. Let's just say when I got home on Sunday, part of the Dixon spread was some sides from Mission Barbecue. Made a point to trek up to Plum Tree Drive and grab some Mission Barbecue. So with that being said, I haven't experienced a UNC tailgate. My wife is going to the game this weekend. The Heels play Fairfield at Georgetown Prep, neutral site game. I will be at Homewood Field watching Loyola and Hopkins tangle. Following weekend, I'm doing Duke women on television.
Okay.
And it's at the same time that Carolina plays Hopkins in Chapel Hill. So I'll miss that game. But then the following weekend is the doubleheader, March 1st and 3rd, Princeton Penn. I think you're going to be down there. In Chapel Hill, on that Friday at least. That'll be, I think, really my first true taste of a Carolina tailgate.
I think I might have to miss that, actually. Some things changed on the Flynn household. That's going to be like the Bennett, who's an 8-year-old. His championship basketball is that weekend, plus the All-Star game and skills competition, which...
Did he make the All-Star team?
He hasn't yet. They haven't announced it. He will. I think he's one of the best players in the league.
Look at this guy.
He's really good, actually.
Stuff in the box with the votes.
He's, He's real good. But he's been talking about it since last year when he didn't make the All-Star team. And we just found out this week that it's going to be on March 1st. So I don't think we're going to make it to that game. But I'm going to go down the next morning because Princeton is playing UNC on March 1st that night. So I'm going to miss that one, I think. But I'll be down there on Saturday for a basketball game. And then Princeton-Duke game is at noon on Sunday, and I will go to that.
Oh, okay.
But
well, you'll still be on Tobacco Road.
Yeah.
I thought the reason that you couldn't go would simply be because your wife said, "Dan, you can't go. You're not going. I need you here." No, that's cool, man.
No, the whole family's going. Yeah.
So my older boy Matt played basketball when he was younger, made all-star teams, sometimes didn't make the all-star team, but like, you know, as much as it hurts them and kind of get bummed for them if they don't get chosen for something, when they don't make it, that's actually, you'll see if your son's a competitor, which it sounds like he is, everything you've described to our listeners and everything you described to me, that he's going to use that as nightmare fuel to
motivation
to get better.
It definitely tries to. He talks about it all the time. He did not deserve to make it last year, but he got to participate in the skills competition and won the sweet shot shooting competition or the hot shot competition.
Yeah, we never had any extracurriculars like that. The kids just went out and balled. They played, and they're like, "Look, you can play. You have an all star opportunity. If not, you know, better luck next year, kid. But we're not doing the we're not playing horse out there."
No,
although that's a great game.
Right, but so really the two takeaways: one, I'm unfortunately not going to be able to make that Friday night Princeton UNC game. And the second is, I'm also going to miss your first tailgate. I was hoping that I could meet up with you and the UNC tailgate and the Princeton tailgate that night. But we'll have to wait for your review of your first real Tar Heel tailgate as a parent. We'll have to wait for that in a few weeks. All right, Dix. Let's talk about last week first, then we'll talk about a couple midweek games. What were some of your bigger, broader takeaways from the games last week, what you saw on the field?
So week one, really, in the scheme of things, I think what jumped out right away, Virginia against Michigan, just the energy that Virginia played with. And I guess I didn't read it closely enough. I thought I had read, I know Coach Connery of Michigan talked to Inside the Cross, and I thought he said that the Big Ten is not a pretty boy conference.
That is what he said.
Yeah. But how did it get construed or interpreted as the ACC is a pretty boy conference? That he didn't, those words did not come out of his mouth, right?
What do they call that when someone says something?
And whisper down the lane.
No, but when you think they're talking about you and it kind of makes you feel guilty, maybe you feel guilty because it could be true. You know what I mean?
Guilty conscience.
Yeah, I think that was a guilty conscience on the part of like ACC teams thinking
I
that.
Just,
that
I kept
that
hearing
was,
that
was
and I'm
attributed
like,
to them.
I know how to read and I know how to comprehend. I know Kevin Connery, excuse me. I mean, he's not somebody that I think would say something like that. And then when so I'm not going crazy. He didn't say that.
He did not. He said, "We're not a pretty boy conference." Just saying, which is what you always hear coaches say, like, you know, our league is tough. You have to play 60 minutes. It's physical. You know, we grind. The schedule's tough. Every team is good. That's basically what he was saying, man. But hey, they used it to fuel.
I was
going to
say
fury.
Virginia certainly played like they were called pretty boys and their conference was called a pretty boys. So, you know, hats off to the Cavaliers, a convincing win at home against Michigan. I like the bounce back Penn State 18-10 over Villanova. Denver, no letdown after that come from behind victory over Johns Hopkins. They knocked off Air Force 11-9. You know, I was at Silverbacks Park in Atlanta. Great crowd, good atmosphere. I got there late, just as the Army-UMass game was ending. But that was a really, really strong crowd and a very energetic crowd. Then, of course, North Carolina and Mercer battled it out. Tar Heels took the 13-5 win. Maryland, 11-4 over Loyola. Surprising. I watched the first half of that game. That's why I was late to UMass Army. 4-0 Maryland got out. Loyola made it 4-3. And then the Terrapins just defensively and at the faceoff dot were really, really good against a Loyola team that had put up 18 goals the week prior against Georgetown. And then speaking of the Hoyas, they played Johns Hopkins really tough, losing a 2-goal affair in D.C. Look, Georgetown's going to get better. And then that was Hopkins' second win of the week as they knocked off Towson midweek or early week last week. And then they went down to D.C. and took care of business against Georgetown. Hats off to Coach Scudder at Lehigh, his first career victory, 8-7 over Fairfield. So those are some of the, you know, some of the takeaways. I gotta talk about BU, Boston. They beat St. Joe's for their first win last week at a neutral site in Connecticut, Staples High School. And then they turn around, they beat Vermont by 10 goals last weekend. So the Terriers could be maybe last year's version of Army, you know, when Army felt disrespected in the Patriot League preseason and the national scheme of things and the keep the change mantra. Yeah, I mean, BU's had two impressive wins to start out 2024.
And in midweek action, on Tuesday there were four games. Ohio State got a win over Bellarmine. Michigan bounced back with a 21-5 win over Canisius Marquette, blew out Detroit Mercy. Hofstra beat St. John's. But we also got to see the number one ranked team in the country on Wednesday. Notre Dame made their first appearance and just dismantled a very overmatched Cleveland State team.
I didn't get a chance to watch any of that game. And then when I saw the final, I was intrigued. I went and looked at the box score to see who did what. And it looked like pretty much everybody on Notre Dame's roster got an opportunity to get some minutes, which is terrific. But I don't think you're going to take a whole lot away from that. Ohio State at home, Bellarmine, that was a close game.
Yeah.
You know, it ended up being 10-6. I mean, it was a close game throughout. And Hofstra, St. John's came out with some energy, but Hofstra was able to eventually overtake the Storm, St. John's Red Storm, right? Red Storm. Is that what they're called these days?
Yes. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah. And Marquette, that's a team that people feel, many feel could be a sleeper in the Big East, you know, doing what they should do. I think what we're seeing, and how do I approach this? You look at the landscape of club lacrosse, and now with club being what, 6-7 years old, you're seeing a real separation of programs. What do I mean by that? When you look at the national landscape of club lacrosse, Team 91, Long Island Express, Eclipse out of Connecticut, Crabs in Baltimore, the Hawks based out, you know, another Baltimore area team. Yeah. And I know I'm missing a couple potentially, but they're like really separating, you know, and a lot of them are part of that NLF, the National Lacrosse Federation. I think we're starting to see that at the collegiate level. You know, the elite programs and the upper programs are really getting a lot more distant between the bottom third of, you know, you look, Tuesday used to be for the Hunter, right?
Yeah.
Look at these finals, 22-8 Marquette over Detroit Mercy, Michigan 21-5 over Canisius. Those games were not close. Notre Dame 25-3 over Cleveland State. So I think the separation is getting more and more at the college level.
Yeah, do you
like
think
we're
that's
seeing it, what feeds these programs, you know, the clubs that feed these programs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it. But I think it's if you think of the club scene, there's always people leaving a club program to maybe go to a better club program, right, to play with better players and a more competitive thing where they like a scene. And we're seeing that in college between the transfer portal and extra COVID years. Again, not to pick on people, but Princeton guys aren't going to Cleveland State went for their fifth year, right? They're going to Big Ten schools, ACC schools for the most part, some Big East schools. That's where they're going, right? And we're getting a consolidation of talent and depth at the best, top 20 teams that is when they go out and play these non-conference games, we're seeing real separation. And I think that's what you're getting at. Right.
It's something that I've been thinking about in my head, but I haven't verbalized it, really haven't thought it through a whole lot.
That's
our whole return to some level. I mean, I know we're going to return to, roster sizes aren't going to be as gigantic starting next year. A lot of programs are saying goodbye to 20 plus guys, seniors combined with graduate students and other situations. Yeah, maybe we return to some level, the competitive level gets evened out when that happens.
Sure. I was watching part of the beginning of the UVA game, and I think they said Virginia said goodbye to like 18 seniors, fifth year grad students.
Yeah, from last year's roster. Yeah.
So what's happening is we used to backfill those classes like that with freshmen, and now they're being filled with, five-star freshmen. And transfers who are really good, experienced players. Some are ready to start right away. Some are role players. I mean, the depth of talent is going to a consolidated group of schools. And that's, I think, where we're seeing the separation. But it should change a little bit. But I don't know, with the transfer rules and NIL opportunities, we might continue to see that even for when that fifth year of opportunity goes away and it's just, still like 4 years of eligibility, but we might see guys more frequently leaving for greener pastures, as they put it. I have another question for you. I've been thinking about these guys with their fifth years and how they're breaking records.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, I've been watching North Carolina the other night, Armando Bacot, really good college player. Don't know what his pro potential is going to be. But people joke that he's been playing for the Tar Heels he's like 39 years old or something like that. I think he's only like 24 years old. But it's his fifth year. Here's the rule. He's also like the leading rebounder in UNC history and second or third all-time in scoring. You should have to wipe out that year, that 2020 year where you got everything but the NCAA tournament. All your records from that year go away. So you get to pick 4 years that your records count for. And the rest of them go away. So whether it's basketball, lacrosse, like even in lacrosse, guys still got to play. Some guys had to play like six or seven games before the season was cut off in 2020. We throw out any of the points or records for that one, and you only get 4 years for the record books. What do you think of that proposal?
I just, we're recording this at a time where Caitlin Clark, in a few hours, is going to become the number one scorer. Is that in NCAA Division I women's history or women's basketball overall? Or
I think it's in women's.
Okay. Still very impressive.
Really? But this is only her fourth season.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, but
she could play another. She has another year of eligibility.
Right. Okay.
She might destroy every record in history.
I didn't know that until you told me.
Yeah. She's got another year of eligibility.
I don't pay much attention to records and this and that and the other thing. I mean, look at the University of Maryland, where Matt Hahn's goal scoring record stood for 20 years. And then you have Matt Rambo breaks it. And then Jared Bernhardt breaks it. And then Logan Wisnowskis breaks it. It's great. And they're all incredible players, all Towerton trophy winners, right? And national champions, but I don't find them to be, I don't know. Maryland, incredible program. We're talking to Ajax in this show, and three amazing players, but do I think they're any better than Joe Walters or, other guys that have come through Maryland offensively because they hold those records? No, I would think that they're better players based on what I see.
Yes, yeah, sure.
Based on their performance, based on their leadership. And I'm not saying that, please, the Rochester area, don't hate me. I'm not saying that these guys are better than Joe Walters or Matt Hahn or, you know, any of that. But I guess that's – I'm just trying to draw a parallel of, okay, great, you got these records. But, yeah, I think that does come into play when you play, you know, 50 more games, or even if it's 20 more games than the people that you broke the records of, is yeah. that as impressive? I don't know. I mean, they're still going out and producing and playing and all that kind of thing. But I'm just not a records guy,
okay,
if that makes sense.
Sure. I hear what you're saying. I still think it's something to be considered. And then for those guys who only play 4 years, who say, like, you know, I'm done. Yeah, my COVID year or whatever. We just take your 4 years. You can count that year, but you get to pick which 4 years. You get to pick which
one. I don't think it's a bad proposal. But, I mean, still, a whole body of work is a body of work, you know?
Yeah, but you got a whole bunch of extra time. That's all true. I'm saying. I mean, there were guys who, you know, back in the old days, they couldn't play as freshmen. They could only play as sophomores, juniors,
and seniors.
Yeah,
only 3 years. Sure.
And that's why, you know, certain guys.
Sorry, I guess I'm the wrong person to ask that question of, because I just don't like records. To me, I'm like, okay, what the records that count to me are wins and losses, and are you holding the trophy up or not? Or, you know, did your team improve? Did you maximize your talent? Like, those are the things that matter to me.
All right, Dix, you mentioned our guest this week, Ajax Zapatello. We had a great conversation with him. Let's bring him in now and talk to him ahead of his big game at Syracuse this weekend. Our guest today is Maryland defenseman Ajax Zapatello. The senior from Portland, Oregon, is a first-team preseason All-American and one of the top cover guys in all of college lacrosse. Ajax, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Ajax, great to talk with you today. You guys are off to a good start here in 2024, but before we dive into that, 2023 for the Maryland Terrapins, a season that has been coined, you know, not a normal Maryland season or a disappointment, one of which, you know, a season that saw you injured, missing multiple games, especially down the stretch. How would you best characterize Maryland in 2023, the season that you guys experienced a year ago, and how it's really helped you shape the vision and the goals for 2024?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always – each year is different. And, you know, Coach Tillman's been doing a great job of just kind of putting that in perspective for us. You know, I came in a really unique time, and it was 2021 when it was COVID. We went undefeated until we lost in the national championship, and then we pretty much got that entire team back, minus a couple guys. And, you know, we were able to do something that's pretty spectacular and go undefeated. And so going into my third season as a junior, I'd only lost one game, and that was in a national championship. And so that was the majority of our team, who wasn't either a fifth year or senior, had never really lost before except one time. And so, you know, especially we had awesome leadership, Brett, Geppert, Kaufman, our captains for that last season. But, you know, I think it just puts into perspective, like, for so many of the guys, it felt like the sky was falling and we're like, what's going on here? Like, this is crazy. What's happening? And all the other guys that had been there before COVID were like, this is normal. Like, you know, you're supposed to lose some games. It happens. We play a really tough schedule with a really, really lot of great opponents and players. And it's all part of playing the game. I think one thing that, you know, people always say it wasn't our best year last year, but at the same time, you know, we made it to the Big Ten championship. We made the NCAA tournament. So, you know, obviously it didn't end how we wanted it to, but at the same time, you know, we did a lot of great things and accomplished a lot of great things as a team. And as always, it's awesome to put on that Maryland jersey with 50 other guys that all want the same thing.
Yeah, it's pretty high expectations when you just described making it to a conference championship game and the NCAA tournament. That's a high bar for a lot of other programs. So definitely puts it into perspective. You mentioned the Maryland jersey, and this year you get to wear the number one. What does that mean to you? And how did that come about, you being selected to wear that coveted number one jersey?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something when I was looking at the school, it was never in, like, all right, that's the end goal. I want to get number one. It was, you know, I want to come here and play lacrosse and win national championships. And, you know, Coach Tillman kind of just pulled me in his office one day and We were just kind of talking about the team and everything like that. And then just kind of out of nowhere, he laid it on me. He's like, we want to give you number one this year. And my initial reaction was kind of like, are you sure? You know, just because it definitely caught me off guard and everything. But yeah, it's a really awesome honor. I mean, especially being a kid from the West Coast, you know, kind of being able to represent the entire state of Oregon. It really means a lot to me. And you know, my family were the first people I called, and you can just tell how much it meant to my dad and my mom, just because they sacrificed so much for me, and you know, having to fly me to the East Coast just about every weekend to get recruited when I was growing up. So it was really cool to, you know, have that play out. But yeah, at the same time, it is a number. It's a historic number here, but you know, it doesn't really change a whole lot from, you know, we're team first kind of guys, and we just love being around the guys. And at the end of the day, it is just a number. But I mean, it's a huge honor to be able to wear that, and even just see the guys that I've played with and have come before me, and Jared Bernhardt, Logan Wojnarowski, and Brett Makar. It's pretty awesome to just be even in that category of names. And it's really been unique, you know, having Jared here, having him be a part of the team, and being able to kind of bounce ideas off of him. And then, you know, I'm close with Logan and Brett, so they're always a text or phone call away, which is really unique.
Ajax, you mentioned coming from the Northwest, the Oregon area, and Portland in particular, has produced a lot of All-American lacrosse players. Peter Baum, sort of the trailblazer, but recently Tucker Dordovic, Sam Hanley, Ross Scott, Alex Schlosser, just to name a few. What's it mean to you to represent Portland and the Pacific Northwest and carry on that tradition for up-and-coming young guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. I don't think you know, many other guys get to say they're kind of coming from the place I'm coming, which is really cool. And it's awesome. I mean, it's such a tight-knit community, lacrosse is in general, but then when you get out there, I mean, it shrinks to a whole nother level. I mean, me, Alex, Ross, all the guys you just named, like, none of us went to the same high school, but we're all really close just because it's such a small world out there, which is really cool. And that's something that I kind of gravitated towards at a young age. It's like, wow, I made so many friends playing this sport. And some of them have been my best friends to this day. It's just awesome, you know, be able to go back home in the summer, working for Team Oregon and other stuff, and just coach the next generation of lacrosse players. 'Cause, you know, I was in their shoes one time. I'll never forget guys like Colin Squires, who was a great defender at Denver, you know, him kind of showing me the ropes and everything like that. It's really cool and very rewarding.
Not only did you guys not go to the same high school, but there's no really commonality of the colleges that you each chose. You know, the names that Dan just read off, Dordovic, Syracuse, and Peter Baum was Colgate, Hanley, University of Pennsylvania, Ross Scott, Rutgers, Schlosser, Princeton. How does that work out? You guys don't, you know, you end up at different colleges. You figure maybe a couple Oregon guys might want to band up and, hey, let's go to Maryland together and make some noise.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's all part of the game. You know, I kind of realizing growing up that, all right, if I want to play Division One lacrosse, there's just no shot I'm gonna be able to stay on the West Coast. You know, I kind of had to realize that. If you want to include Denver, Air Force, and Utah as the West Coast, then that's about as close as you get. But otherwise than that, it's all pretty much Midwest or East Coast. And then, you know, it's all kind of it's just getting exposure with that. You know, we all had different past to where we got. You know, some of those guys were really talented five-star recruits, and other guys not so much. And you know, it's kind of cool to see where all our roads have led us. But you know, it's kind of funny, I always joke, like, I think Syracuse at one point had like three or four Oregon guys, and I was like, you know, they kind of got on the pipeline a little bit. They saw what Oregon was capable of, and started going for some of the guys, which was awesome to see.
They were the first people to recruit out in the Pacific Northwest. There were a couple of brothers from Vancouver who were pretty good for the Orange. Hey, Ajax, in the preseason, Inside Lacrosse ranked individual players and also like team units. You were the highest ranked defenseman, and your overall defensive unit at Maryland was top five nationally. I want to hear you talk about the other guys on your defense and what makes them special. And also, what level of comfort do you get having a guy like Logan back in the cage, who's, you know, been a national champion, been the most outstanding player in the Final Four?
Yeah, I mean, me and Logan have been playing a long time together now, so it's been awesome to develop that relationship with him. I mean, he's one of the most nice, genuine guys I've ever met. He's super easygoing, you know, always just having a good time. Nothing can really faze him, which is pretty awesome to have in a goalie, especially with that goldfish memory, you know, next play. And he does a great job of that. And he's really just kind of a steady Eddie, keeping it cool on the defensive end. And then our defensive, you know, kind of group is, it's been awesome. We're a super tight knit group. I'd tag us as a really hardworking and, you know, focused group. And we get a lot of stuff done together, which is really cool. You know, I think for us as a unit, it's one thing that kind of separates us is the ability for guys to kind of just pick up a short stick and play. You know, we've seen that with a couple of our close that guys that came in as close guys, and you know, now they're playing D mid for us and they've been awesome. You know, a couple that come to mind are Nick Redd and George Stamos, and they've been doing a great job for us, which is really unique. And I think just goes back to the systematic defense that Jesse's put in for us. It's really just trusting each other, following the game plan that he puts in every week and just executing it at a high level. And then, you know, you got a lot of Vermont transfers this year, which has been great. It's awesome to have those guys in on the team now. And, you know, it's been cool to kind of get new faces and build relationships with those guys, both on and off the field. All of them are funny in their own ways and just great dudes that we love having in the locker room. And then, you know, having guys like Colin Burlace, I think he did an awesome job last week with his matchup. I think kind of, you know, steady Eddie as well. He originally was a great off ball guy, and you could tell this summer he's just really worked on, all right, how do I get better on 1-on-1 defense? And, you know, we definitely all trust him way more, and it's been awesome to see him grow as a player. And then same thing with Will Schaller and Jackson Canfield. Those guys, you know, kind of some bigger boys playing the woods sometimes, being the kind of the enforcers of the defense. But it's awesome. I mean, we're meshing really well together. It's just a great group. We love hanging out with each other. We love spending time with each other, whether it's, you know, in the film room, we're always joking around, or, you know, just on a regular weeknight, grabbing dinner with each other, hanging out, going over to someone's house to cook. It's really just a fun group to be a part of.
Going over other people's houses to cook. One young man that I'm familiar with, Brian Ruppel, he's got the Instagram page, Ruppel Cooks or Ruppel Kitchen or something. Is that a frequent stop for the defense?
Yeah, no, that's kind of the hotbed for places to eat. I mean, I was just over there Super Bowl Sunday, and those guys were cooking up some nice chicken parm sandwiches, some mac and cheese, had the works going. They got a good setup over there. They're efficient. They all know their role in the kitchen, which is awesome. And it's a fun spot. And then, I mean, it's awesome. We love that sophomore class too. They got a lot of great guys. So then it's just awesome to, you know, eat a great meal and then hang out with each other afterwards.
Your name, Ajax, very unique. You have a brother, Hopper. Can you give us shed some light on how your folks decided to name you guys?
Yeah, I get asked this question a lot, and honestly, I've asked my parents a handful of times, and there really isn't a story behind it. Both my parents, Beth and Brian, you know, more on the generic side of names, but I think they just wanted to give me and Hopper some more original names, which is pretty cool. I'm pretty grateful for that because, you know, I love my name. It's kind of it's unique in its own way, and it's definitely I think kind of fits my personality with being a little more creative and outside the box with it, but I love it.
Last week, Maryland held Loyola, who was coming off an 18-goal performance against a pretty good Georgetown team, to 4 goals. Your assignment was on Evan James, and you held him to, as Dixie likes to say, double donuts. What was the game plan going into that against Loyola, and what was your mentality going into that game last week?
Yeah, no, obviously they're a really well-respected team. You know, I think the year before that, obviously stuck with everybody that was a part of that team. You know, we're all really competitive guys. None of us like to lose. And that was, it was an awesome game to be a part of last year. I mean, they have an awesome atmosphere. That place was packed, and it was definitely a cool game to be a part of, but it wasn't cool to be on the losing side of it for sure. And so, you know, it's all week. We were just super focused and trying to just focus on getting back to playing Maryland lacrosse and, you know, trusting the game plan that Jesse Bernhardt puts in for us, which is every week, is an awesome one, and we all buy into it. And then, at the same time, the scout guys are giving us an unreal look. I'm going up against Aiden Aiken, who is going to be a really great player here, and he's giving me a great look, kind of making it frustrating for me at times during the week, just knowing what I got to work on if I want to have a successful game. And that goes for all the scout guys. They do a great job week in and week out of just giving us an awesome look, and makes it really easy for when we go into a game to kind of see what Loyola is running, because we've seen it all week with our guys. So I think that's really the two biggest things. Obviously Loyola is a great team, and I think they're going to have a successful season, and I'm looking forward to watching them. But, I think Jesse Bernhardt does a great job of just implementing an awesome game plan, and we just did a good job of executing it. At the same time, Logan McNaney was there to bail us out a handful of times. So it's awesome to have him back in cage and everything like that.
This week, you'll travel up to Syracuse to play a really high-flying Orange team. ESPNU, 6 o'clock. What have you seen from them on film, and how excited are you to face the Orange this Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I think you ask anybody on our team, we're super excited. I personally love playing in the Dome. I think it's an awesome venue for how brutal the drive up is. It definitely makes it worth it to go up and play in such a cool atmosphere. You can tell how much, just like here, lacrosse means a lot to people up there, so it's always an awesome place to play. But they move the ball so well. They got a really talented team with a bunch of talented guys, and it seems like they're meshing really well together. Every year it's kind of the same focus, is you got to be tightened up off ball, because they do such a good job of moving the ball around. And like I said, they got some pretty unreal players, and even just transfers. They got some really great transfers. So, we definitely have our hands full this week. But, as a defensive unit, we're definitely excited to go head-to-head. I think it should be an awesome, awesome weekend.
All right. A couple quick hitters before we let you go.
Let's do it.
Who's the best Oregon player or your hero from an Oregon lacrosse player?
I mean – honestly, there hasn't really been a lot of defensive guys, so probably got to go with my guy, Colin Squires.
Great. What's your favorite road venue?
It's got to be either Syracuse at the Dome. It's awesome. Not too bad playing inside. Or Virginia. I think that's a really cool atmosphere, and last year it was packed.
Favorite food spot in College Park?
Got to be Mama Lou's. Can't go wrong with the chicken parm and a little vodka sauce.
Toughest guy to guard that you've had to face?
I think probably Connor Schellenberger. He's very quick. I take a lot of pride in that matchup. Every year we play him and spend a lot of time watching film. But, he's so fundamentally sound.
Funniest guy on the team?
Got to go with my boy Wixie or Wes Schmidt. Those two guys, they're always cracking jokes in the locker room, to make just about anybody laugh.
Favorite Taylor Swift song?
I'm not a Taylor Swift fan, so I can't even tell you a song.
Favorite Terps team to watch play?
Are you talking lacrosse or just any sport?
Any sport. Which games do you like going to?
I mean, the basketball games are super fun. It's especially when you get the gold rush and everybody packs a stadium. It's a pretty cool atmosphere.
TikTok or Instagram?
Instagram. Definitely got me hooked on the Instagram reels.
And finally, best road meal when you guys go on the road, where's your favorite place to eat?
Gosh, up in Syracuse, Coach Tillman's got one of his boys. It's usually when we go to Albany, and they take awesome care of us. They feed us like nobody else. It's chicken parms out the wazoo, but it's awesome.
I'm sure you're looking forward to this trip then. Best of luck this Saturday against Syracuse and throughout the season. Ajax, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
What a pleasure to talk to Ajax. That guy's buttoned up.
He is. He was ready for us. Very savvy.
What a great young man. And that gets us into our game previews for this week, Dix. Let's get into that. There are some excellent, excellent games this weekend. And what's really exciting is that this is the first weekend where everybody is playing. The Ivy Leagues are playing. Everybody's getting out on the field this weekend. And we'll see the full complement of games On Saturday, February 17th, there are some doozies, and we'll start. Number 3, Virginia goes to number 17, Richmond, for a 1 o'clock faceoff.
We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Richmond is a team that is very, very good, very talented. And they've been in the NCAA tournament the last couple of years, and their reward is playing the University of Virginia. But this is going to be a terrific game. Speaking of guests, we had Dan Shamati on our podcast last year, and he said our program, the measuring stick, is the University of Virginia. Like, that's what we want to aspire to. That's what we want our program to be. So they get another opportunity this weekend against a Virginia team that looked really, really strong against Michigan. And they get them at home. Will that make a big difference? I'm not really sure. But that's, you know, Richmond took Maryland to 2 overtimes a couple weeks ago. And better believe that they're going to be ready to play. Faceoffs will be big in this game. Jared Chinoy for Richmond, very experienced. See how he can do against some of the new faces that the Cavaliers will trot out.
In a game that's always a dogfight, number 7 Army play at number 11 Rutgers. That game is at 1 o'clock.
Rutgers, one of the biggest movers in the Inside Lacrosse media poll. They jumped up 4 or 5 spots, and they've looked good early on in the season. You know, we talked about Ross Scott and Shane Knobloch getting some support. They're getting it from Amon, you know, doing a nice job. And they're playing well defensively. Good goaltender, with Carden Stoller. It looks like he's emerged as the starter for the Scarlet Knights. Army, they trailed a good part of that UMass game, if I'm not mistaken. I was following it on Inside Lacrosse, the scoreboard that day. Pulled it out in the end. You know, it's always interesting with Army UMass and then Army Rutgers early season. The winners of those contests tend to trend upwards in their season. So we'll see what happens this weekend with those two teams battling it out.
In a game featuring that I'm calling a top 20 matchup, unranked Georgetown, who's still getting receiving votes right outside of the top 20. They're 0-2, and they'll travel up to Philly to take on number 19 ranked Penn in their season opener. And this is a big game for both teams, and really big for Georgetown.
So last year, Georgetown started 0-3. You know, losses to Hopkins, losses to Penn, lost to Notre Dame. And this year they've lost to Loyola, they lost to Hopkins. It would be great to get a win against a Penn team that, as you mentioned, first game of the season. The Hoyas have advantage in that they faced live game action. The disadvantage is they don't have any film on Penn for 2024. But this is a Georgetown team, I think, that's getting better. They played better defensively last week. And Penn, again, that's a team I know I said a couple weeks ago, when we're really talking about the preseason, you just feel like you never know what you're going to get out of Quakers. But I think this is going to be a good bunch. They're going to be really psyched to play this game. Ben Smith, nice scoring attackman back. But how will Penn life be after Sam Hamlin? Because he's been the guy for the last, you could say 4 years, but really, you know, last 2 years in particular, he has been the alpha male in Philadelphia for the Quakers. So be interested to see how this one plays out.
A game that you and I will have a close watch on, Dix, is number 20 ranked Loyola Greyhounds at number 9 Johns Hopkins. 1 o'clock on Homewood Field.
I think when you look at these two teams, you're surprised at, for Hopkins, you're surprised how well Logan Callahan has faced off so far for the Blue Jays. What I don't see is his backup, Tyler Dunn, or the number 2 man, Tyler Dunn, getting a lot of reps. You know, that could be a risky proposition for the Blue Jays, but he's having a great 2024 thus far. On the Loyola side of things, big question mark was the defense replacing some faces, and that defense has played pretty good. You know, they played pretty well, and Luke Stout between the pipes has been really good. But you know, Loyola has not faced off well, you know, especially last weekend against Maryland, and that can wear a defense down, not just in the game, but as the season goes on. So I think Loyola is going to have to find a way to get some extra possessions. And then when they have the ball, obviously they've got some things to work out that didn't go very well against Maryland a week ago. Hopkins is a team. This is a game last year where Loyola beat Hopkins, and Russell Melendez and Jacob Angeles did not play for the Blue Jays. Jacob Angeles, to me right now, might be the most dangerous offensive player that the Blue Jays possess, just with his shake, his feeding ability, his ability to turn the corner. He's really, really good. So, you know, Loyola's going to have their hands full. Hopkins remembers last year. Should be a great game. That game's on ESPN Plus, by the way, to be tape delayed on ESPNU, I believe the next day or later on Saturday. I'm not quite sure.
Check your local listings. But yeah, it's
Richmond. Richmond will be on ESPN Plus as well. They do a nice job down there of streaming their games.
And finally, a game that will be on ESPNU in primetime, 6 o'clock. We talked to Ajax Sapatello earlier. His number 4 Maryland Terrapins, who are undefeated, 2-0, travel up to the Dome to face the number 5 ranked Syracuse Orange, who are 3-0. And this should be fun to watch.
This is the decision that I have to make. You know, you have the Hopkins Loyola game, and obviously you want to hang out. Obviously you want to hang out with my son and the families and his friends and at that. But you're like, okay, Maryland Syracuse, 6 o'clock. I want to watch that game. So I got to figure out what's, you know, we'll see where the night takes us. But Maryland defensively facing off, really, really good. I think the question marks are at the short sticks, where Dante Trader looks like he's not coming back to play. Kohler is hurt right now for Maryland. Alex Wicks went out with an injury against Loyola. But you got to give a lot of credit to Nick Redd, and I always want to say John Stamos, but it's George Stamos. Just think of Full House and other endeavors by Mr. Stamos. But yeah, he scored a big goal last week against Loyola, where he just posted up and, you know, ripped it from 12 yards. When you look at Syracuse, it's this fresh, that freshman class has really grown up, and they're facing off a lot better than they were a year ago. But this is a different animal that they're welcoming into the Carrier Dome, other than, you know, all due respect to Colgate, who shocked Penn State, had a great game, and the Raiders look good so far. But this is not Vermont. This is not Manhattan coming into the Carrier Dome. This is the University of Maryland. This will be a terrific game.
Yeah, I can't wait. Certainly the game of the week in week 2 of this season. All right, Dix, it's time for our give and go. As a reminder, the Fly and Dixie podcast is presented by Simplicity Group, our friends at Simplicity Group. Dix, this weekend, you and I are hanging out. We're going to a concert on Sunday night with our wives. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll Valentine's Day special.
The D-Flies and the Dixies are getting together outside of the realm of the podcast. Yeah, looking forward to it. Excited.
Yeah, we're going into Baltimore to watch Journey. Journey and Toto are coming to the CFG Arena, and I'm pretty excited about it.
I'm excited for the show, but this will be my first time in the CFG Arena since it's been renovated. I heard it's spectacular.
That leads us into our thing. We're talking about some 80s bands like Journey. And with Valentine's Day this week, I started thinking, like, what are the songs we want to hear? What are the ballads that Journey might play? And everyone knows Don't Stop Believing. You know, that's not a ballad. Well, it's an anthem.
Yeah, it is an anthem. Yeah, I wanted to go rock anthems with this.
But I want to go power ballads. Yeah. A song like Faithfully by Journey. Will they play that? Will that make their set list? And here's our task today. You each get to pick 3 power ballads, right? That you could be on loop for a whole weekend, let's say. All right, so pick wisely. All right, I picked first last week, so I'll let you pick first. 80s era power ballads. I have made a list of 12 songs.
So I have, I should be covered no matter which three you pick, but I'd so really like
a, I'm to getting hear a, I'm getting a real sense of what Dan Flynn put on his mix cassette tapes to his
definitely
sweethearts back definitely. In the, on the mean, in the mean streets of Tower Hill
right.
back in the day. And at Hopkins too.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. I get to pick first.
You get to pick first. What's your number one draft pick for power ballad?
I'll go Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue.
It's right there. Okay.
Yeah. Dixon and by the way, that's we talk about television as well. The Dirt on Netflix is the biopic of Motley Crue. It's a couple years old, but man, that is a fantastic watch.
It's good. I have that book too.
Home Sweet Home.
Motley yeah, great, Crue. Great pick. All right, so that's your number one pick. I'm gonna go with Alone by Heart.
I can't believe you picked that.
Why?
That was my number two pick. Huh? Oh my God.
Great minds. That's a, that
I
is a,
I did not think that you would give the respect to Ann Wilson and her vocals.
And Nancy and Ann Wilson and Heart. Yeah, that's my number one pick. That is an absolute banger.
That's a banger.
There's some soft notes that she hits in that that I don't know. There are very few people in the world who can hit those notes.
Okay. I agree.
You're up.
Okay. Then you took my, you took what was going to be my number two. So I have to bump one up. I'll go Love Bites by Def Leppard. I was thinking of Hysteria. But yeah. That's not really a power ballad. It's a slower song and probably with Photograph, my favorite Def Leppard song. But Love Bites. And then Love Bites, they actually put a record out last year where it's Def Leppard with like the, I don't know, Royal Philharmonic or something. And they're backed with orchestra. It's not as good as S&M, the Metallica one, when they're backed by the San Francisco orchestra, but it's still pretty good. So I'll go Love Bites.
Okay, quality. I think I'm changing up my second pick here. I'm gonna go with "Still Loving You" by the Scorpions. I love that song. Love that song.
I like the bridge with the guitar, but other than that, I've never been a gigantic Scorpions fan.
Come on, Klaus Meiner, Rudy Schenker,
Klaus
Herman Rarebell. I can't believe I know like three guys' names that are in that band. But yes, yeah. I'm gonna go with that as my second pick. My brother Gymnasium, he was a huge fan of the Scorps and you know, probably influenced me to pick that one. All right.
Okay. Okay. I got to think about this one for a second.
All right. This is fun. Maybe we'll pick four because I have a long list in front of me. And that was, I mean, that was challenging for me to take that one as my second pick when I have two more that I really want.
I will go When It's Love by Van Halen.
Okay.
Great choice. Sammy Hagar, his range was much different than David Lee Roth. I enjoy both iterations of Van Halen, both Van Halen and Van Hagar for different reasons. But Eddie's use of the synth and all that kind of thing. And you can go Love Walks In, When It's Love, or Why Can't This Be Love?
Yeah.
You know, are all maybe rock ballad-ish, but I'll go, what did I say? Love Walks In?
When It's Love.
When It's Love, yeah. So I guess
that's a great choice. I like that. I'll go with that. All right, I'm going to go with my third choice. Every Rose Has Its Thorn. I love that tune so much. And it's one of my, it's very easy to play on the guitar. It only has like three or four chords. And I love playing that song because it's, I always remember the words and the chords are easy to remember too. So like whenever it's like, so it's a, and it's always a hit. People always know the words. So that's my third
pick. I'm good with three.
All right,
I will say, I'll give an honorable mention to I'll Remember You by Skid Row.
Great song. These are all.
And I'll never forget, I was, so after I graduated high school, I was working at the Super Fresh. It's no longer there anymore. The Super Fresh on Route 40 in Catonsville.
What was your job there?
What's that?
What was your job there?
Produce clerk.
Okay.
And I worked with a young lady who was a year or two younger than me. And, I can remember that song came on. We used to have, I would work crazy. Like I'd get there like 5 in the morning and stuff like that. I just remember we were talking about it or it was playing. And I was like, oh, I'm so sick of this song. And she is what we would categorize when I grew up as a grit, if you understand what that is.
Yeah.
Like a heavy metal fan, guy with a feathered hair, you know. And she goes, oh, you, it's obvious you ain't never been in love before. you must never been in love. So
that's great.
Yeah, when I was like, I remember you. I was getting sick of hearing I remember you that summer.
All these songs just ring out of my head. I almost want to start singing them, but I won't. All right, we'll stop at three. But can I just? You want to hear my?
Go ahead. Yeah, I'd love to here. Hear your rest of your list.
All right, so here's "Purple Rain" by Prince.
Does that count as a power ballad?
Sure, it's great.
Okay.
"Purple Rain."
Yeah, but that's not, all right.
"Don't Know What You Got Till It's Gone" by Cinderella.
I like Cinderella. Cinderella is like low-key underrated for sure.
Yeah, very underrated. I think they have two.
That guy's what, Tom Kiefer, right? He's got a great voice.
Look at you bringing up this. "Keep On Loving You" by REO Speedwagon.
And see, I don't. When I think power ballad, I think metal hair bands.
Okay. What do you think REO Speedwagon was?
They were like Journey, REO, Styx. Okay. They were called corporate rock. Oh, that's their moniker, corporate rock. Fight you on that.
"Heaven" by Bryan Adams.
I would take "Heaven" by Warren over "Heaven." I mean, I love Bryan Adams, but "Heaven." Okay. And "I Saw Red" by Warren.
And I had one more. "More Than Words."
That's a song. If you're not in the mood, you would take the guitar and smack it upside the guy's head.
Yeah.
But if you're in the mood, you're like, all right, I'll leave this on. That song got tired real fast. And I still can't believe Gary Cherone, the lead singer of Extreme, was the third lead singer of Van Halen for a very short-lived stay.
I know. That seems like a good place to stop. A reminder that the D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. We'll be here all season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend. Share the love. It's free. It's Valentine's Day week. Share the love, please. We always love to hear from you, so feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com. That's dflyanddixie@gmail.com. Or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. If you're interested in sponsorship of this podcast, this lovely podcast, give us an email or reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. We'll see you all next week. And as always, enjoy the games.